Daenerys. The stench of the camp was so appalling, it was all that Danny could do not to gag. Sebastian wrinkled up his nose and said, "Your Grace should not be here, breathing these black humours." "I am the blood of the dragon," Danny reminded him. "Have you ever seen a dragon with a flux?" Viserys had oft-claimed that Targaryens were untroubled by the pestilences that afflicted common men, and so far she could tell, it was true. She could remember being cold and hungry and afraid, but never sick. "Even so," the old knight said, "I would feel better if your grace would return to the city." The many-coloured brick walls of Meereen were half a mile back. "The bloody flux has been the bane of every army since the Dawn Age. Let us distribute the food, your grace." "On the morrow. I am here now. I want to see." She put her heels into her silver. The others trotted after her. Jogo rode before her, Aggo and Ricaro just behind, long Dothraki whips in hand to keep away the sick and dying. Sir Barristan was at her right, mounted on a dapple grey. To her left was Simon Stripeback of the Free Brothers, and Marcellin of the Mother's Men. 60 soldiers followed close behind the captains to protect the food wagons. Mounted men all, Dothraki, and brazen beasts and freedmen. They were united only by their distaste for this duty. The Astapori stumbled after them in a ghastly procession that grew longer with every yard they crossed. Some spoke tongues she did not understand. Others were beyond speaking. Many lifted their hands to Danny, or knelt as her silver went by. "Mother," they called to her, in the dialects of Astapor, Lys, and Old Volantis, in guttural Dothraki and the liquid syllables of Karth, even in the common tongue of Westeros. "Mother, please, mother, help my sister. She is sick. Give me food for my little ones, please. My old father, help him, help her, help me."
"I have no more help to give," Danny thought, despairing.
The Astapori had no place to go. Thousands remained outside Meereen's thick walls, men and women and children, old men and little girls and newborn babes. Many were sick, most were starved, and all were doomed to die. Daenerys dared not open her gates to let them in. She had tried to do what she could for them. She had sent them healers, blue graces, spell singers, and barber surgeons. But some of those had sickened as well, and none of their arts had slowed the galloping progression of the flux that had come on the pale mare. Separating the healthy from the sick had proved impractical as well. Her stalwart shields had tried, pulling husbands away from wives and children from their mothers, even as the Astapori wept and kicked and pelted them with stones. A few days later, the sick were dead, and the healthy ones were sick. Dividing the one from the other had accomplished nothing. Even feeding them had grown difficult. Every day she sent them what she could, but every day there were more of them and less food to give them. It was growing harder to find drivers willing to deliver the food as well. Too many of the men they had sent into the camp had been stricken by the flux themselves. Others had been attacked on the way back to the city. Yesterday a wagon had been overturned and two of her soldiers killed. So today the queen had determined that she would bring the food herself. Every one of her advisers had argued fervently against it, from Raznak and the Shavepate to Sir Barristan. But Daenerys would not be moved.
"I will not turn away from them," she said stubbornly. "A queen must know the sufferings of her people."
Suffering was the only thing they did not lack.
"There is scarcely a horse or mule left, though many rode from Astapor," Marcellin reported to her. "They've eaten every one, your grace, along with every rat and scavenger dog they could catch. Now some have begun to eat their own dead."
"Man must not eat the flesh of man," said Argo.
"It is known," agreed Ricaro. "They will be cursed."
"They're past cursing,"
said Simon Stripeback. Little children with swollen stomachs trailed after them, too weak or scared to beg. Gaunt men with sunken eyes squatted amidst sand and stones, shitting out their lives in stinking streams of brown and red. Many shat where they slept now, too feeble to crawl to the ditches she'd commanded them to dig. Two women fought over a charred bone. Nearby, a boy of 10 stood eating a rat. He ate one-handed, the other clutching a sharpened stick, lest anyone try to wrest away his prize. Unburied dead lay everywhere. Danny saw one man sprawled in the dirt under a black cloak, but as she rode past, his cloak dissolved into a thousand flies. Skeletal women sat upon the ground, clutching dying infants. Their eyes followed her. Those who had the strength called out, "Mother, please, Mother, bless you, Mother." "Bless me," Danny thought bitterly. "Your city is gone to ash and bone. Your people are dying all around you. I have no shelter for you, no medicine, no hope. Only stale bread and wormy meat, hard cheese, a little milk. Bless me, bless me." What kind of mother has no milk to feed her children? "Too many dead," Aggo said. "They should be burned." "Who will burn them?" asked the barrister. "The bloody flux is everywhere. 100 die each night." "It is not good to touch the dead," said Jogo. "This is noon," Aggo and Ricaro said together.
"And that may be so," said Danny, "but this thing must be done all the same."
She thought a moment. "The Unsullied have no fear of corpses. I shall speak to Grey Worm." "Your Grace," said Sir Barristan, "the Unsullied are your best fighters. We dare not loose this plague amongst them. Let the Astapori bury their own dead."
"They're too feeble," said Simon Stripeback.
Danny said, "More food might make them stronger." Simon shook his head.
"Food should not be wasted on the dying, your worship. We do not have enough to feed the living."
He was not wrong, she knew, but that did not make the words any easier to hear.
"This is far enough," the queen decided. "We'll feed them here."
She raised a hand. Behind her, the wagons bumped to a halt, and her riders spread out around them to keep the Astapori from rushing at the food. No sooner had they stopped than the press began to thicken around them, as more and more of the afflicted came limping and shambling toward the wagons. The riders cut them off.
"Wait your turn," they shouted. "No pushing. Back, or stay back. Bread for everyone. Wait your turn."
Danny could only sit and watch.
"Sir," she said to Barristan Selmy, "is there no more we can do? You have provisions."
"Provisions for your Grace's soldiers. We may well need to withstand a long siege. The Storm Crows and the Second Sons can harry the Yunkishmen, but they cannot hope to turn them. If your Grace would allow me to assemble an army."
"If there must be a battle, I would sooner fight it from behind the walls of Meereen. Let the Yunkai try and storm my battlements."
The queen surveyed the scene around her.
"If we were to share our food equally, the Astapori would eat to their portion in days, and we would have that much less for the siege."
Danny gazed across the camp, to the many-coloured brick walls of Meereen. The air was thick with flies and cries.
"The gods have sent this pestilence to humble me. So many dead. I will not have them eating corpses."
She beckoned Aggo closer.
"Ride to the gates and bring me Grey Worm and 50 of his Unsullied."
"Khaleesi, the blood of your blood abyss."
Aggo touched his horse with his heels and galloped off. Sir Barristan watched with ill-concealed apprehension.
"You should not linger here over long, your Grace. The Astapori are being fed, as you commanded. There's no more we can do for the poor wretches. We should repair back to the city." "Go if you wish, sir. I will not detain you. I will not detain any of you."
Danny vaulted down from the horse.
I cannot heal them, but I can show them that their mother cares.
Jogo sucked in his breath.
Khaleesi, no.
The bell in his braid rang softly as he dismounted.
You must not get any closer. Do not let them touch you. Do not.
Danny walked right past him. There was an old man on the ground a few feet away, moaning and staring up at the grey belly of the clouds. She knelt beside him, wrinkling her nose at the smell, and pushed back his dirty grey hair to feel his brow.
His flesh is on fire. I need water to bathe him. Sea water will serve. Marcelin, will you fetch some for me? I need oil as well for the pyre. Who will help me burn the dead?
By the time Aggo returned with Grey Worm and 50 of the Unsullied loping behind his horse, Danny had shamed all of them into helping her. Simon Stripeback and his men were pulling the living from the dead and stacking up the corpses, while Jogo and Ricardo and their Dothraki helped those who could still walk toward the shore to bathe and wash their clothes. Argo stared at them as if they'd all gone mad, but Grey Worm knelt beside the queen and said, "This one would be of help." Before midday, a dozen fires were burning. Columns of greasy black smoke rose up to stain a merciless blue sky. Danny's riding clothes were stained and sooty as she stepped back from the pyres. "Worship," Grey Worm said, "this one and his brothers beg your leave to bathe in the salt sea when our work here is done, that we might be purified according to the laws of our great goddess." The queen had not known that the eunuchs had a goddess of their own.
"Who is this goddess? One of the gods of Gis?"
Grey Worm looked troubled.
"The goddess is called by many names. She is the Lady of Spears, the Bride of Battle, the Mother of Hosts, but her true name belongs only to these poor ones who have burned their manhoods upon her altar. We may not speak of her to others. This one begs your forgiveness."
"As you wish. Yes, you may bathe if that is your desire. Thank you for your help."
"These ones live to serve you."
When Daenerys returned to her pyramid, sore of limb and sick of heart, she found Missandei reading some old scroll, whilst Eri and Jiqui argued about Ricardo.
"You're too skinny for him," Jiqui was saying. "You're almost a boy. Ricardo does not bed with boys, this is known."
Eri bristled back.
"It is known that you are almost a cow. Ricardo does not bed with cows." "Ricardo is blood of my blood. His life belongs to me, not you,"
Danny told the two of them. Ricardo had grown almost half a foot during his time away from Meereen and returned with arms and legs thick with muscle and four bells in his hair. He towered over Argo and Jogo now, as her handmaids had both noticed.
"Now be quiet. I need to bathe."
She had never felt more soiled.
"Jiqui, help me from these clothes, then take them away and burn them. Eri, tell Kayser to find me something light and cool to wear. The day was very hot."
A cold wind was blowing on her terrace. Danny sighed with pleasure as she slipped into the waters of her pool. At her command, Missandei stripped off her clothes and climbed in after her.
"This one heard the Astapori scratching at the walls last night,"
the little scribe said as she was washing Danny's back. Eri and Jiqui exchanged a look.
"No one was scratching," said Jiqui. "Scratching? How could they scratch?" "With their hands," said Missandei, "the bricks are old and crumbling. They are trying to claw their way into the city."
"This would take them many years," said Eri. "The walls are very thick. This is known."
"It is known," agreed Jiqui. "I dream of them as well."
Danny took Missandei's hand.
"The camp is a good half mile from the city, my sweetling. No one was scratching at the walls."
"Your grace knows best," said Missandei. "Shall I wash your hair? It's almost time. Resnick Mo Resnick and the Green Grace are coming to discuss
the wedding preparations." Danny sat up with a splash. "I'd almost forgotten.
Perhaps I wanted to forget. And after them I am to dine with Histar, she sighed. Eri, bring the green tokar, the silk one fringed with mirish lace. That one was being repaired, Khaleesi. The lace was torn. The blue toka has been cleaned. Blue, then. They will be just as pleased.
She was only half wrong. The priestess and the seneschal were happy to see her garbed in a toka, a proper Myronese lady for once. But what they really wanted was to strip her bare. Daenerys heard them out, incredulous. When they were done, she said,
I have no wish to give offence, but I will not present myself naked to Histar's mother and sisters.
But, said Resnick Mo Resnick, blinking, but you must, your worship, before a marriage it is traditional for the women of the man's house to examine the bride's womb and her female parts, to ascertain that they are well formed and fertile.
Finish Galaze Galare.
An ancient ritual, your radiance. Three graces shall be present to witness the examination and to say the proper prayers.
Yes, said Resnick, and afterwards there is a special cake, a women's cake, made only for betrothals. Men are not allowed to taste it. I'm told it's delicious, magical.
And if my womb is withered, and my female parts accursed, is there a special cake for that as well? Histar, Sir Lorik, may inspect my woman's parts after we are wed. Khal Drogo found no fault with them. Why should he? Let his mother and his sisters examine one another and share the special cake. I shall not be eating it, nor shall I wash the noble Histar's noble feet.
Magnificence, you do not understand, protested Resnick. The washing of the feet is hallowed by tradition. It signifies that you shall be your husband's handmaid. The wedding garb is fraught with meaning, too. The bride is dressed in dark red veils above a toka of white silk, fringed with baby pearls.
Ah, the queen of the rabbits must not be wed without her floppy ears. All those pearls will make me rattle when I walk.
The pearls symbolize fertility. The more pearls your worship wears, the more healthy children she will bear.
Why would I want 100 children?
Danny turned to the Green Grace.
If we should wed by Westerosi rites, the gods of Gis would deem it no true union.
Galaza Galare's face was hidden behind a veil of green silk. Only her eyes showed, green and wise and sad.
In the eyes of the city, you would be the noble Histar's concubine, not his lawful wedded wife. Your children would be bastards. Your worship must marry Histar in the Temple of the Graces with all the nobility of Meereen on hand to bear witness to your union. Get the heads of all the noble houses out of the pyramids on some pretext, Dariahud said. The dragon's words are fire and blood.
Danny pushed the thought aside. It was not worthy of her.
As you wish, she sighed. I shall marry Histar in the Temple of the Graces, wrapped in a white toka fringed with baby pearls. Is there anything else?
One more small matter, your worship, said Resnick. To celebrate your nuptials, it would be most fitting if you would allow the fighting pits to open once again. It would be your wedding gift to Histar and to your loving people, a sign that you had embraced the ancient ways and customs of Meereen.
And most pleasing to the gods as well,
the Green Grace added in her soft and kindly voice.
A bride price paid in blood.
Daenerys was weary of fighting this battle. Even Ser Barristan did not think she could win.
No ruler can make a people good, Selmy had told her. Baelor the Blessed prayed and fasted and built the Seven as splendid a temple as any gods could wish for. Yet he could not put an end to war and want. A queen must listen to her people,
Dany reminded herself.
After the wedding, Histar will be king. Let him reopen the fighting pits if he wishes. I want no part of it.
Let the blood be on his hands, not mine.
She rose.
If my husband wishes me to wash his feet, he must first wash mine. I will tell him so this evening.
She wondered how her betrothed would take that. She need not have been concerned. His Zur Lurek arrived an hour after the sun had set. His own tokar was burgundy, with a golden stripe and a fringe of golden beads. Danny told him of her meeting with Resnek and the Green Grace as she was pouring wine for him.
"These rituals are empty," his Zur declared. "Just the sort of thing we must sweep aside. Mirian has been steeped in these foolish old traditions for too long."
He kissed her hand and said,
"Daenerys, my queen, I will gladly wash you from head to heel, if that's what I must do to be your king and consort."
"To be my king and consort, you need only bring me peace. Skarhas tells me you have had messages of late."
"I have."
His Dar crossed his long legs. He looked pleased with himself.
"Yunkar will give us peace, but for a price. The disruption of the slave trade has caused great injury throughout the civilized world. Yunkai and her allies will require an indemnity of us, to be paid in gold and gemstones."
Gold and gems were easy.
"What else?" "The Yunkai will resume slaving as before. Astapor will be rebuilt as a slave city. You will not interfere."
"The Yunkai resumed their slaving before I was 2 leagues from their city. Did I turn back? King Cleon begged me to join with him against them, and I turned a deaf ear to his pleas. I want no war with Yunkai. How many times must I say it? What promises do they require?"
"Ah, there is the thorn in the bower, my queen," said Hisdar Zur Lurek. "Sad to say, Yunkai has no faith in your promises. They keep plucking the same string on the harp about some envoy that your dragon set on fire."
"Only his tokar was burned," said Danny scornfully. "Be that as it may, they do not trust you. The men of New Gis feel the same. Words are wind, as you yourself have so oft said. No words of yours will secure this peace for Mirian. Your foes require deeds. They would see us wed, and they would see me crowned as king to rule beside you."
Danny filled his wine cup again, wanting nothing so much as to pour the flagon over his head and drown his complacent smile.
"Marriage or carnage? A wedding or a war? Are those my choices?"
"I see only one choice, Your Radiance. Let us say our vows before the gods of Gis and make a new Mirian together."
The queen was framing her response when she heard a step behind her. Oh, the food, she thought. Her cooks had promised her to serve the noble Hisdar's favourite meal, dog in honey, stuffed with prunes and peppers. But when she turned to look, it was Ser Barristan standing there, freshly bathed and clad in white, his long sword at his side.
"Your Grace," he said, bowing, "I am sorry to disturb you, but I thought that you would want to know at once. The Stormcrows have returned to the city with word of the foe. The Yunkish men are on the march, just as we had feared."
A flicker of annoyance crossed the noble face of Hisdar Zur Lurek. "The queen is at her supper. These sellswords can wait." Ser Barristan ignored him.
"I asked Lord Dario to make his report to me, as Your Grace had commanded. He laughed, and said that he would write it out in his own blood, if Your Grace would send your little scribe to show him how to make the letters."
"Blood," said Danny, horrified. "Is that a jape? No, no, don't tell me. I must see him for myself."
She was a young girl and alone, and young girls can change their minds.
Convene my captains and commanders. Histar, I know you will forgive me."
"Mirian must come first," Hisdar smiled genially. "We will have other knights, 1,000 knights.
Sir Barristan will show you out." Danny hurried off, calling for her handmaids. She would not welcome her captain home in a tow car. In the end, she tried a dozen yarns before she found one she liked, but she refused the crown the Jiqui offered her. As Dario Naharis took a knee before her, Danny's heart gave a lurch. His hair was matted with dried blood, and on his temple a deep cut glistened red and raw. His right sleeve was bloody almost to the elbow.
"You're hurt," she gasped. "This,"
Dario touched his temple. "A crossbowman tried to put a quarrel through me eye, but I outrode it. I was hurrying home to my queen to bask in the warmth of her smile."
He shook his sleeve, spattering red droplets. "This blood is not mine. One of my sergeants said we should go over to the Yunkai, so I reached down his throat and pulled his heart out. I meant to bring it to you as a gift for my silver queen, but four of the cats cut me off and came snarling and spitting after me. One almost caught me, so I threw the heart into his face."
"Very gallant," said Sir Barristan, in a tone that suggested it was anything but. "But do you have tidings for her grace?"
"Hard tidings, Sir Grandfather. Astapor is gone, and the slavers are coming north in strength."
"This is old news and stale," growled the shavepate.
"Your mother said the same of your father's kisses," Dario replied. "Sweet queen, I would have been here sooner, but the hills are aswarm with Yunkish sellswords. Four free companies. Your storm crows had to cut their way through all of them. There is more and worse. The Yunkai are marching their host up the coast route, joined by four legions out of Nugis. They have elephants, 100, armored and towered, Tulasi slingers too, and a corps of Carthian cavalry. Two more Gascari legions took ship at Astapor. If our captives told it true, they will be landed beyond the Skahazadan to cut us off from the Dothraki Sea."
As he told his tale, from time to time a drop of bright red blood would patter against the marble floor, and Danny would wince.
"How many men were killed?"
she asked when he was done.
"Of ours? Oh, I did not stop to count. We gained more than we lost, though." "More turncloaks?"
"More brave men drawn to your noble cause. My queen will like them. One is an axeman from the Basilisk Isles, a brute bigger than Belwas. You should see him. Some Westerosi too, a score or more. Deserters from the Windblown, unhappy with the Yunkai. They'll make good storm crows."
"If you say,"
Danny would not quibble. "Meereen might soon have need of every sword." Sir Barristan frowned at Dario. "Captain, you made mention of four free companies. We know of only three. The Windblown, the Long Lancers, and the Company of the Cat."
"Sir Grandfather knows how to count. The second sons have gone over to the Yunkai."
Dario turned his head and spat. "That's for Brown Ben Plum. When next I see his ugly face, I will open him from throat to groin and rip out his black heart." Danny tried to speak and found no words. She remembered Ben's face the last time she had seen it.
"It was a warm face, a face I trusted."
Dark skin and white hair, the broken nose, the wrinkles at the corners of his eyes. Even the dragons had been fond of old Brown Ben, who liked to boast that he had a drop of dragon blood himself.
"Three treasons, will you know, once for gold, and once for blood, and once for love." "Was Plum the third treason, or the second? And what did that make Sir Jorah, her gruff old bear? Would she never have a friend that she could trust? What good are prophecies if he cannot make sense of them? If I marry Histar before the sun comes up, will all these armies melt away like morning dew and let me rule in peace?"
Dario's announcement had sparked an uproar. Resdak was wailing.
The shavepate was muttering darkly. Her blood riders were swearing vengeance. Strong Belwas thumped his scarred belly with his fist and swore to eat Bran Ben's heart with plums and onions. "Please," Danny said, but only Miss Sandy seemed to hear. The queen got to her feet.
"Be quiet! I have heard enough!"
"Your grace," Sir Barristan went to one knee, "we are yours to command. What would you have us do?"
"Continue as we planned. Gather food as much as you can."
"If I look back, I'm lost."
"We must close the gates and put every fighting man upon the walls. No one enters, no one leaves."
The hall was quiet for a moment. The men looked at one another. Then Resnick said, "What of the Astapori?" She wanted to scream, to gnash her teeth and tear her clothes and beat upon the floor. Instead, she said, "Close the gates. Will you make me say it thrice?" They were her children, but she could not help them now.
"Leave me. Dario remained. That cot should be washed. And I have more questions for you."
The others bowed and went. Danny took Dario Naharis up the steps to her bedchamber, where Iri washed his cut with vinegar and Jiqui wrapped it in white linen. When that was done, she sent her handmaids off as well.
"Your clothes are stained with blood," she told Dario. "Take them off."
"Only if you do the same." He kissed her. His hair smelled of blood and smoke and horse, and his mouth was hard and hot on hers. Danny trembled in his arms. When they broke apart, she said,
"I thought you would be the one to betray me. Once for blood, and once for gold, and once for love," the warlock said. I never thought Brown Ben. Even my dragon seemed to trust him."
She clutched her captain by the shoulders.
"Promise me that you will never turn against me. I could not bear that. Promise me."
"Never, my love." She believed him.
"I swore that I should wed Hisdar Zolorik if he gave me 90 days of peace. But now, I wanted you from the first time that I saw you. But you were a sellsword, fickle, treacherous. You boasted that you'd had 100 women.
100?
Dario chuckled through his purple beard. "I lied, sweet queen. It was 1,000, but never once a dragon." She raised her lips to his.
"What are you waiting for?"